the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
I wonder why we look at owls as a picture of wisdom. It's interesting, isn't it? Maybe because they can see well in the dark, and that wisdom, to a degree, is someone who helps us to see well in the dark as we're going along. Maybe you can think of somebody who is your wise person who helped you to see well in the dark. I rang somebody yesterday morning at 9 o'clock who is one of my people who helps me to see well in the dark. Tonight, we're going to talk about some general principles about wisdom. I was going to say that next week is a slightly different evening. I think Clive and I are going to lead this together. That's what I hope. I'm going to look at Clive. And we're going to look at some of the sayings that are in Proverbs next week. Now, what I was going to suggest, that because we learn actually through interaction, and we're going to have a bit of that next week, that if there are questions about what I'm saying this evening that you want to ask next week, then write them down and we'll talk about those next week. Maybe we'll become wiser as we come along for that. I'm very aware of the fact in preparing this that we are finite beings. That's something that's come to me quite a lot. Do you ever think about that? You have a finite amount of time on earth. You have a finite amount of energy. You have a finite amount of understanding. And you have a finite amount of capacity. And yet we are seeking to live well during this time. So how are you going to do that? How are you steering along? So I'm going to quickly, hopefully, bring us through some initial principles tonight. As I say, do ask questions if you'd like to. So sometimes there are prayer outreaches that I've been involved with or I've heard before where you go on the street and you talk to people. It's terrifying going on the street and talking to people, generally speaking. But I find this question a helpful question to do. It's not saying, can I talk to you about Jesus straight up, for which people respond in all sorts of ways. It's saying this, well, look, if you could ask God for one thing, the God either you believe in or the God you don't believe in, what would you ask him for? And I wonder what your answer to that question would be this evening. If you could ask God for one thing tonight, what would it be? It's a question that lurks behind this series and about what it is to live wise, and specifically the background to this Old Testament idea of wisdom. And I wanted to begin with a narrative that tells us a little bit about this. You know that in the first verse of what was read just now, that there's a name mentioned that the Bible associates with wisdom, Solomon. So if you look in 1 Kings chapter 3, the figure Solomon, who's behind Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon's, is pictured there. And there he has a dream, it says. And in his dream, he is asked precisely this question. If you could ask God for one thing, what would the one thing that you would ask me for? And his answer comes like this. He says, I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? A few things strike me from this statement. You know, it's interesting. Solomon says, I am only a little child. Well, I don't know how old he was when he wrote those words. Maybe literally a little child, or maybe I feel small. I feel like a kid. I have a confession to you. I'm going to be 58 next week, and I feel often like a little boy still inside. And that's alarming in its own way and reassuring on other occasions as well. He's a servant. He says, I'm a child, I recognize my finite nature, and I'm a servant, and I want to serve these people. And what I need in order to do that is discernment, to be able to distinguish between right and wrong. Give me a wise and discerning heart. And God answers this prayer. He gives him wisdom, but you know from the story that he doesn't just give him wisdom, does he? He says, because you've asked for wisdom, then other things will come on as well. Wealth and honour will be coming on behind you. I'm still waiting for wealth to come on behind, maybe because I haven't found wisdom yet either as we come along. There's some element there, isn't there, of seek first the kingdom of God and everything else will be added to you. Maybe that's a wise New Testament statement that's there. So this request in narrative form provides the framework for Proverbs. This king, who was a child and a servant, who wanted to govern well, writes Proverbs. And these Proverbs are written and form the substance of the book that we're going to look at. Wisdom, which is the thing that this book is about, is described as precious. It's more precious than rubies, more costly than gold, it says. And the instruction behind Proverbs, I like this, is it's what's called a tautology. Do you know that word? Where something is stated which is blindingly obvious, really, is that a way of putting it. Here is a verse, I talked to Clive about this, it's my favourite verse. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. It's an interesting statement, isn't it? But I think there is something in this. It's not just a bit funny. It says the way you begin to get wise is to recognise that you need to find wisdom, that you don't already have it, that you seek it. And this is really, really important as we go through this book and look at it. Proverbs is a book that expresses practical wisdom. It's not a book about laws. What are written here are not laws. These aren't things that you must do. They are an acquisition of practical wisdom observed from life and lived out over time, which are passed on from one generation to the next in order to help wisdom to be passed on and for governance to work well. It's not just, it seems, about what we do, but it's about who we are and about who at the centre of our faith on which all of this is founded. One commentator I read this week said this, and I think this is useful. From the prologue to Proverbs, we learn that wisdom is something that can be taught and learnt, that this teaching has something to do with the formation of character, and that this wisdom is anchored in the fear of God. So three things, I think. It's something that can be taught. It's a substance which you can put into practice. It has action to it. Secondly, when you do that, it changes who you are and you are transformed. It forms character. And thirdly, this happens because it's based on faith, something that's solid there. So in our group down here, Samuel was sharing that his wise person was a grandparent who had a habit of prayer and who had an attitude, a bit like yours, Anna, before God, that said not just about what you should do, but about who you should be as we come along. Now, I wonder how much you think about that, how much of your life you think about what should I do next, and more about who am I becoming? What is this teaching me? We've had an interesting weekend again, and I'm trying to wrestle with this myself at the moment. And I'll let you know, sometimes I haven't been doing very well with it, but I'm getting there slowly. It's a process that we're in, and this is really, really important. The book that we're reading about begins with a setting. It says this: the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And then in verse 8, a bit further down, it says, listen, my son, to your father's instructions and do not forsake your mother's teaching. So there's a few things here. First of all, there's a context, isn't it? These are proverbs of the king written within a courtly circle. So when we read these proverbs, initially they were probably, this is what commentators think, I like this, they were part of civil service training. They were saying that if you're going to be involved in government, you need to learn wisdom. And these sayings are there to teach you principles which will help you to govern well. Wouldn't it be interesting if governments today were taught principles for wisdom as part of their training to going on? He says there, furthermore, that this is your father's instruction or your mother's teaching. That doesn't necessarily mean literally your parents, but what it does suggest is wisdom comes to people because it is passed on from somebody who has acquired wisdom over the years. So it seems to me incumbent, if you live out that first instruction, get wisdom, that you want to be drawing a line alongside somebody who has wisdom in order to acquire wisdom. And it seems to me, the more that I thought about this as we've gone on, is that actually all of this is very similar to the language we use about discipleship. You want to learn how to follow Jesus? You need someone who has been following Jesus for time, and you will learn from them. Not just information, you will learn to be transformed, not just to be informed. And that's the point as we go along. In fact, when we look at these, at the way that these things are passed on, what seems to be important isn't just knowledge, but experience. Someone has been there and done it and has road tested it before you. So somebody wrote this about this, which it's not on there, actually, sorry. You're going to get something else there. He says this. The wise could not tolerate, I want you to listen, the wise could not tolerate disparity between tongue and deed, between what was said and what was thought, between what was taught and what was modelled. It's really interesting that, isn't it? If you go to school or you go to university, some of you are students here at the moment, when you're taught engineering, you don't listen to the lecturer and think, well, I hope you're an upstanding man who's lecturing me this, because your character really matters in what you're informing me. You just want to know how to be a good engineer as you go along there. Written into education here in Proverbs is that who you are is at least as important as what you know. In fact, those things come together, because knowledge is about knowing God, ultimately. And these proverbs are underwritten by an assumption of faith. So, are you developing an idea of what wisdom might be as we think through this? The purpose of the book of Proverbs, then, is to gain wisdom. Here it is. And it's in those verses. The purpose of the Proverbs is for gaining wisdom and instruction. And that word instruction could be translated correction, discipline, or guidance. I don't know how you feel about those words. In other words, this is not an impersonal thing that's being talked about. You will be given some wisdom and taught this, but you will be taught it by somebody within a context, and you will be sought to live this out as you go along. This isn't simply you can pass an exam on it. This is, are you seen to be living out what you have learned as you go along? Are you getting wiser? And it seemed to me that that has something in parallel with, you know, the verse in 2 Timothy 3:16 that we know. There's a lot of very good memory verses that always seem to be 3:16, it seems to me, in the Bible for some reason. It says, all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, some of these things. And then the purpose of that is in verse 17, so that the servant of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. Wise people serve God through wise living. This is what it says. Okay? Does that make sense as we're going along? So the context, however, is important, because it goes on to say this, that for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what it says here is right and just and fair. Can you see that in your translation? It's for doing what is right and just and fair. Now, this seems to me to make an assumption that if you are going to learn wisdom, the place that you are going to live this out is not going to be in private, it's going to be in the public sphere. It's going to be when you go to work. It's going to be in the courts. It's going to be in the public arena, in your relationships with people where you go. Because righteousness and justice and fairness are worked out in those places. Now, this is really, really important as well as we consider what we want to think about why wisdom. Your wisdom, if you want to be a wise person, is going to be found not by sitting in isolation in a house group. It's going to be, how do you behave when you go to work? How do you parent your children? How do you love your spouse? How are you a friend? How are you a neighbor? How are you a servant? And that will be seen because you will have principles which will be right and just and fair. And that's what you're trying to live out. It's a bit like, isn't it? You know that verse in Micah 6:8? What does God require of us? And it says, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Wise people act justly. Wise people are merciful. Wise people are humble. And you will do that in the public sphere. That's where it will come about. Do you think that's fair enough to say that? I was thinking about this. These are my conclusions. You can disagree with me, but it seems to me that that's true. And that reminded me of this. Do you remember this from LICC? The six M's of missional practice, I think is what it says. So it talks about being a messenger of the gospel. Obviously, we want to share the gospel, but it also talks about modeling godly character, being a mouthpiece for truth and justice, making good work, molding culture, and ministering through grace and love. In other words, if you want to be wise, you have to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. In the language of Belmont Church, you have to live the life as well as share the story. You cannot just do one. This morning, we talked a lot about the importance of do not forget to share the good news. Well, the reality is, it seems to me, that sharing the good news is about telling people about who Jesus is, but you can only do that if you're living this life. It's about a whole person approach. In fact, your mission, your evangelism, is going to be a reflection of who you are as a person. Somebody said to me that the favourite model of evangelism was like somebody who bumped into somebody who was carrying a glass of water and got wet. I really like this image. He says that if someone bumps into me, Jesus would spill out. You should get wet. That's the way in which you pass on the gospel. And the danger is if someone bumps into me, something else spills out. Proverbs then. You got it so far? Proverbs is about education, it's about relationship, it's about being in the public sphere. All of these are wisdom things. Proverbs is directed to the simple. For giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and direction to the young. So, are you simple? That's an interesting question. What's your response to that thing? In fact, if you look at the footnote in the NIV, it says that the word simple denotes a person who is gullible, without moral direction, and inclined to evil. And I thought, aren't we all? Aren't we all? So, if you want to be wise, you first of all have to recognize that you have been, and if you may still be, simple. This comes to do with humility and recognizing the finite nature of your understanding as well. It's a formative text that's here for the simple. As I said, it's not about information. It's about transformation. It will make you different. So Proverbs then is offered to the simple to instruct them and prevent them from becoming foolish. Wisdom, it turns out, is not innate. Now, Clive helped me with this, but I've now forgotten about it. Sorry, I'm referencing Clive a lot because we talk a lot during the week when I'm thinking about stuff. Now, this is a quote from a man. I'm going to spell you his name. P-T-A-H-H-O-T-E-P. I think you pronounce it Tahotep, because you don't pronounce the first P. You can look him up. He was an ancient Egyptian who wrote books of philosophy. But he said this: no one's born wise. Wisdom isn't innate. You're not born as a wise person. Wisdom is something that you acquire. Remember, the beginning of wisdom is get wisdom, which implies that you don't have it to start off. Simple people are not fools, but they become fools if they reject wisdom. One of the commentators that I read this week says, fools are not those who cannot learn, but those who will not. It's really interesting, that, isn't it? So, you are foolish, and maybe folly is connected with pride a little bit here. What do you think? Sometimes you think, well, I know best. And I don't like being told what I should think or what I should do. I don't like somebody saying, well, maybe you need to learn a little bit. But wise people embrace that. This is discipleship as well, isn't it? Wise people say, if you keep living this way, you are not being faithful to the gospel. You are not being filled with the Spirit of Christ. And when someone bumps into you, Jesus isn't going to spill out. Here's some thoughts. What do you think? And how are you going to respond? So Proverbs offers instruction to the simple, but it also says in Proverbs, let the wise also hear and gain in learning, and the discerning acquire skill. So the book of Proverbs isn't just for entry level, if you like. It implies the fact that wise people are lifelong learners. So when you finish your... I'm going to come back to Evan here. When you get a glorious master's in a few weeks' time and you qualify as an engineer, that won't be the end of your learning about being an engineer. You have to keep learning. Because if you don't keep learning, you'll fall behind and you won't have what you need. And for all of us, the reality is we never arrive, do we? We never arrive as we're doing this. We are people who need CPD. Do you know that? Do you ever have that in work? I think it's called continual professional development. But maybe we need continual personal development as well. What do you think? Is that important? I don't know how you feel when you hear the word CPD. There's a lot of laughter. Oh, yeah, we know about that. It was part of the Baptist world when I was in there a lot, and there was a lot of, yeah, we should really get round to that, but we don't do it, basically. But it's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing to learn to be better at something, to know more. It's a good thing to be better at loving somebody. You know, I've been married for almost 28 years, and I'm still learning about what it is to love someone, and sometimes painfully for the person involved. But it's true. So, wisdom upskills us as well. You need a bit of wisdom. You're going to need it this week. And doing all of this will come out of a context of God's love for us. It seems to me that Proverbs has a strong implication that if you want to be wise, then you need to be humble. Socrates' most famous thing that he said was, "The only thing I know is that I know nothing, and I'm not quite sure that I know that." Now, I don't quite go that level, to be honest with you. I think I do know one or two things. However, it seems to me that this is an attitude that sees ourselves as in a particular way. We are not the answer to everything. You may be capable at some things, but you are not the answer to everything, and that's okay. But you are someone who is developing. One of the commentators said this, I really liked it. A wise person is a learning person, a person in process, not a finished product. So if you were projecting yourself to somebody, either in what you say or just by the way you present yourself that says, well, I know it, I know the answer, that's not really very wise. Wisdom comes from saying, I have a strong conviction, I think I know what the right thing to do here is, and I hold to this, but I'm still learning as we go along here. That's really, really important. So far, so good. Learn wisdom and encourage discipline. Pursue righteousness, justice, and equity. Keep learning. But the foundation of it all comes down to the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Where do you begin? Where's your starting point? Well, if you don't start there, you're not going to get anywhere. There's a joke that I used to tell about, do you know the way to, I'm going to change it slightly, know the way to Exeter Airport? And the person answering says, well, I wouldn't start from here. Isn't life like that so often? Do you know how to get through this situation you're facing? Well, to be honest with you, I wouldn't start from where you're starting from, but you have to, don't you? That's where you begin. So where do we start from in our pursuit of wisdom? We start with the fear of the Lord. The Message puts it like this, which I think is quite helpful. Start with God. The first step in learning is bowing down to God. I think that's really profound, that translation of that. The first step of learning is confession. It's putting yourself in a posture towards God. He says, you, not me. You're the answer, not me. It takes us a while to learn that, doesn't it, practically? We'll all assent to that, but it takes us a while. Proverbs stands then in the heart of what Mark Green, who used to head up LIC, called the sacred secular divide. He called this, the sacred secular divide is the pervasive belief that some things are really important to God and that other things aren't. In other words, church is really important to God. Your work is less important to God. He said, no. God is in all of these things. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, not just when you lead house group, but when you go to teach tomorrow morning, or when you go to study tomorrow morning. Somebody who taught me at Bible College said this, which I find helpful. Wisdom instruction holds together fear of the Lord at the core of one's being with the way in which one carries out one's job, the inward orientation and the outward behavior. So wisdom literature is not just about what your heart is like, although that's important, nor is it just about what you do, although that's important. It's about an integrity between the two. That what you do and who you are totally in relationship with each other. You don't live in two different worlds as you go along. This is emphasized in Proverbs by the fact that wisdom is described as contrasted with folly. There is folly and there is wisdom. Two voices calling people to walk in two different ways. It's really important, I think, that wisdom is a way that you walk in, not a subject that you study. It's something that you walk in as you go along. It says in Proverbs 8, wisdom is beside the gate leading into the city at the entrance. Wisdom is there calling out to you as you walk into the city through the gate. In other words, as you walk into the public sphere. Wisdom is there. When you walk out your front door tomorrow morning into Exeter or wherever you're going, wisdom's there as saying, remember me. Remember me. Walk my way. But it also says in Proverbs 9 that folly is there as well. Folly is an unruly person. She's simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by on their way, let all who are simple come to my house. In other words, let those who don't want to learn become fools. So as you're walking out your door tomorrow morning to the Met office, and there's wisdom on one side going, be wise today, be wise today. And there's folly on the other side, just do whatever you think's right and do follow me. One of those voices cares about you and one of them doesn't. If wisdom then is in some senses the outpouring of God's character, then Jesus is the complete revelation of wisdom, isn't he? And what did Jesus say? I am the way. I am the way. Walk this way. Walk this way. Folly and wisdom in Proverbs, I just wanted to move towards an end with this, are also depicted in these two different perspectives as being faithfulness and adultery. There is a faithful woman, unfortunately they're both women in the Bible, I think it could be men. There's a faithful character and an adulterous character. And folly is the adulteress. It says, wisdom will save you in Proverbs 2, also from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words, who's left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. Now this is really important, it strikes me. Faithfulness and adultery, we at surface level think about sexual ethics or whatever it is that you're going on. But that's not what those things refer to in the Old Testament most of the time. You look in the book of Hosea, that's not what it talks about. The adulterer is somebody who is unfaithful to God, who disregards God's covenant. The faithful person is the person who walks the path of wisdom, which is the way that is prescribed by the covenant in the Old Testament. So, and it talks here, doesn't it, about faithfulness or adultery founded on the covenant you made before the Lord. So loitering beneath this practical instruction of Proverbs is covenant faithfulness that leads to shalom. You want to walk the way that's going to give you peace, then you walk the way that God has prescribed in his covenant. If the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, then the covenant is the form of that wisdom. And that presents a problem. How wise are you? I wonder, how wise are you? Human beings are described as either wise or foolish. The wise get wisdom, but the fools despise it and reject learning, correction, or instruction. They're seduced to believe, I know best. Ever felt that? I know best. But this language is picked up in a psalm as well. Psalm 14. So I'm going to whiz through this one. Psalm 14 says this. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, their deeds are vile, there is no one who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. All have turned away, all have become corrupt. There's no one who does good, not even one. Wow, that's a pretty grim outlook, isn't it? Consistently, there is no one who responds to God in the way in that we are intended to do. That's at the heart of a Christian worldview. There is a virus in us. We are programmed to do one thing and our actions do something else instead. I do not do what I want to do. The very thing that I want to do, I do not do. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So how do we get wisdom? Well, I'm going to leave that as a question rather than tell you the answer to some extent. Proverbs, it seems to me, presents us with genuine wisdom. I've been reading this book. I think I've read it through maybe four times in the last month from beginning to end. I suggest you do it. And as you do it, you'll think, well, this is good stuff. This is quite wise, is what I thought when I read it. Because the practical observation of people who've been trying to live well and are passed down is wise. It is good to listen to people as we go along there. So there is an earthly level on which that's what we've got in the book of Proverbs. It's not going to save your life, but it's good instruction. It's good to remember that our personal devotion, when you pray tomorrow morning, which I'm sure you will do, before whatever you do, what's the point in that prayer? Well, it's to bring the whole of you before God so that what happens when you leave the house follows that pattern. Are your prayers tomorrow morning going to issue in good action in the public sphere and a character transformed in the process? But as Christians, we do this not so much in the pursuit of God, but as those who, in response to being captured by his love. And that's the vital difference. It does change the way we seek to be wise, I think, if we think like that. All scripture has a context, it seems to me, that tends towards a fulfillment in Christ. And we're going to be talking about that next week. All this is true of wisdom, and we'll see it throughout the whole series that we've got here. And the books we're going to look at, Proverbs is a book that basically says life is like an algebra formula. If you do this, this will happen, everything will turn out all right. When we get to Ecclesiastes, it says, I did this, I keep doing this, I'm worn out, and it doesn't seem to be going very well. When you get to Job, we say, I did all the good stuff, and yet bad stuff is happening to me. Where is God? So the formula changes, and wisdom is found through these questions. It's all right to ask why, isn't it? Don't you think so? You love that scene in Bruce Almighty? He says, there's two rules. You can't make anyone fall in love with you and you can't mess with free will. And Bruce Almighty says, well, can I ask why? And God says, the figure of God says, yes, you can. And that's the beauty of it. Last word for my Old Testament lecturer. The spirituality of wisdom culminates in a spirituality lived out and fulfilled by Jesus. We're not going to say any more than that, but it's important that when you talk about Proverbs and wisdom, as we've talked about, that you don't leave out this thing. This is where we're travelling towards. We're not going to get there straight away because we're reading in a certain point in the book at the moment and we haven't got there, but we are going to get there. And it's important that when we read one subpart of the book, chapter 2, we're privileged to know how the story ends. And that changes the way we read the chapter that we're in. Okay? So next week, number one, you can ask a question. Number two, you come because we're going to share some of these sayings and we're going to work out together what they mean and we're going to learn together. What do you think? We can do that? Good. I'm going to hand to Chris. Thank you.